Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Tonight we revisit a very special Mooney Goes Wild documentary from 2015 about one of Ireland's most impressive yet least understood birds, the common swift. These remarkable creatures migrate to us from sub-Saharan Africa each May and remain here for the shortest period of any migrant breeding bird, departing again in August. As we will hear, swifts face a lot of challenges both here in Ireland and across Europe, but also benefit greatly from the efforts of dedicated conservationists and local community groups who are working hard to reverse their declines. From Belfast to Baku, we look at some of the problems that these birds face in a rapidly changing world and meet some of the people who are determined to save them. At the end of the documentary, I'll be speaking with Niall Hatch, who will give us an update on how swift populations have been faring in the 7 years since this programme first aired. It's August 2015, and in Dublin, a group of people has gathered at the City Council civic offices on Wood Quay to wish a farewell to one of Ireland's most enigmatic and impressive migratory bird species as it embarks on its long annual journey to Africa.
Welcome to Slán to the Swift here today in the atrium of Dublin City Council to showcase what we're doing to try and help protect swifts in Dublin as part of the Dublin City Urban Birds Project. What we're hoping to do is to showcase some of the really exciting work that's taking place across the city for urban birds, but particularly for these special birds, the swifts.
This special Slán to the Swifts exhibition, organised by Birdwatch Ireland and Dublin City Council, is designed to help Dubliners better understand and appreciate these remarkable birds, which each summer return to their city to nest. Brian Caffrey is manager of Birdwatch Ireland's Urban Birds Project.
So they're here for a very short time every year. They're one of the latest of our migrants to arrive. They generally don't get to Ireland till the very end of April or the first week in May. It's generally when we see them. And then they're one of the first to head off. About the end of July, first couple of weeks of August, will be when the swifts all head off on their migration. In that time, we're here today to, I suppose, celebrate the swifts in Dublin and also to try and raise a bit of awareness about the bird and why they're so important. Also to try and talk to people and showcase some of the projects that are taking place both across the city and nationally, and also to raise awareness that they're a bird that's in trouble. They've declined quite a lot in recent years. In fact, nearly a quarter of their population has declined in the past 20 or 30 years. So it's a bird that we're quite concerned about and that we need to put some effort in to try and protect them and save them. So they nest in generally in urban areas, in our towns and cities and villages across the country. And within those urban spaces, they're nesting in buildings. And in order to protect them, we need to know what buildings they're actually in. So that, for example, if renovations are taking place or if construction work or re-roofing is happening, we need to know which buildings the swifts are in so that people can take the appropriate steps in order to try and protect those nests and those buildings. But also here with Dublin City Council today, we're trying to talk to architects and to planners and to people working in the construction sector to maybe encourage them and whet their appetite, if you like, as to what they can do to try and encourage and protect swifts across the city. So, for example, in old buildings that swifts are nesting in, and that's generally where we get them, are in old buildings because there'll be cracks and crevices in those buildings for them to nest in. When renovations are taking place, we're encouraging people to carry out those renovations outside of the summer season when the swifts are nesting. But also in new builds, for example, we're encouraging architects and planners to think about swifts and maybe build in, for example, swift bricks into these new builds to try and provide more homes for them in our cities.
I suppose we better describe what a swift brick is.
Sure, so a swift brick is a cement block of the same dimensions of a regular one, but it's just got a small entrance hole in the centre of it, perfect size for a swift to nest in, and inside the brick is hollow. So when you're building a new build, this swift brick would generally go in at the top, the last block to be laid or last brick to be laid, and that will provide a safe and secure place for swifts nesting. But one of the great things about swift bricks are once they're put in a building, generally a new build, it's there for the duration of the life of that building. So it's a home for life, if you like, for a swift. So it's a great way to try and help protect the birds.
And of course, for pre-existing buildings, there are other solutions as well. I see we have this quite an array of different style of nest boxes on the table, and they're quite unlike nest boxes, let's say, for blue tits or robins that people might be familiar with in their own gardens.
Swift boxes are an important part of the toolkit, if you like, to try and help protect these birds. And as part of that, people can put up boxes on their houses, or they can go in office buildings, schools, hospitals, you name it. They can go in any building. And what you're essentially doing is you're creating space for swifts to try and nest in, because many of these existing nest sites are been lost as buildings are renovated or construction work takes place. New fascias, new soffits, new roofs. Quite often that work excludes swifts from those buildings that they've been nesting in. So in order to try and provide more spaces for them, you can put up boxes, and that's a great way to try and provide new homes for the birds.
I'm embarking on a journey along with Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland to discover more about these mysterious birds, a species which is such a common summer feature right across Europe, but which has until recently been so little studied and understood. As we will hear, despite the fact that they are such a familiar sight to millions of urban dwellers, working with swifts presents a number of unique challenges, and we still have a great deal to learn about their lives. The process is really only beginning and could take years to complete. Professor John O'Halloran of University College Cork is keen to get involved.
Niall, how are we doing? We go outside and have a look outside?
Let's,
there we go.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Cheers, so Jack. Just going outside, Niall, this is just looking straight above.
Oh, right above there, see it?
Yeah, see the nest box just there. So it's right up at the top of the building. I guess it must be 20 feet, Niall, more, 30?
Yeah, that. I see three entrances there, is that right?
There's three on this side and there's three on the other side. Okay. And you can just hear the loop in the background there.
So you have to play that recording to encourage them to nest, is that the idea?
Yeah, the background here is this is a very modern building. And if you look up the distance into Sunday as well, which is on the north side of Cork City, there's an old building, there's an old church, and that was a traditional nesting site for swift.
Okay.
And they started to refurb this building, and I know when you start refurbing buildings, then there's a risk that you might actually remove some of the nesting habitat.
Sure.
So what we're trying to do on the campus here is to combine education but also enhancement of habitat and providing an opportunity for swifts to nest. So what we're doing here is placing these boxes on the side of the building, and then we're using the tape lure to try and bring the birds down in the hope that they might colonise a nest. And then we can watch them rather like Derek does on his radio show, looking at the blue tits and grey tits, and we can see the secret life of a swift. That's what we're trying to do.
Because they are one of the most mysterious birds that we have in Ireland, aren't they? I mean, their lives have been hidden from us. They're amazing.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, when we listen to the birds flying around, it just brings me back to two things in my life. One is my childhood, where in a little schoolyard in Ballantemple in Cork, this beautiful schoolyard with loads of children running around, and this sweeping down of swifts going up into the eaves. And it was just that the iconic sound for me has remained with me. And then there we go, that's the sound. Isn't it fantastic?
It's screaming. It's so evocative. It reminds me of summer evenings in Dublin where I grew up. You know, that's what it's like. And it's like being in the Mediterranean as well. It's like
that's
you're in
right.
Spain or Portugal or somewhere.
Yeah, isn't that lovely sitting out in those lovely warm evenings? Maybe a glass of wine if we're allowed to have that. Or maybe a cup of tea and just hearing the sweeping sound. There's something really special about it.
It's a glorious evening here tonight. So I saw earlier a few swifts flying over. So hopefully yes. They'll show an interest in the recordings.
Yeah, I mean, it's early in the season now. So we're just in May. So we're only the first week of May. So we would hope that over the next couple of weeks. This is the second year, and the first year there was some interest but not enough maybe. I think I might have seen a great hit slicking into one of the
Saw it there earlier out the window, so maybe it's taking interest in the nest there as well. It's similar sort of entrance hole, I suppose. The cavity
is, yeah. Maybe we just walk around and you can see the ones around the other side.
Let's
there.
Do that.
Yeah, that's good. In other studies, we know that this works extremely well in terms of luring them down from other parts of the country and other parts of the world. And the purpose of that lure is to mimic the birds of flying around. So what it's trying to do is to create an atmosphere here on a campus in a modern building. Here it is in the fantastic. So it's what we call luring. It's calling in the other swifts saying, this is a cool place to be. There's a nest box here. Fingers crossed it'll happen for us.
Excellent. Oh, well, best of luck with it. I mean, I think it really is an exciting project, and it'd be great to have them established here in the building.
Great. Thank you, Niall.
All across their European and Asian breeding range, swifts appear to be in trouble. Modern building methods, which leave fewer nooks and crannies, coupled with ill-considered renovations to older buildings, have left them with even fewer places to nest. This is a common problem, which now affects many urban-dwelling birds. and conservation organisations around the world are now sitting up and taking notice. In May 2012, we travelled to Baku in Azerbaijan. A restoration project had begun on a 12th century tower, which was built as part of the old walled city. Our guide was Samir Nuriyev, director of the State Historical Architectural Reserve.
Yeah, the Maiden Tower is the main monument of Baku, and it's actually a symbol of Baku. In the Middle Ages, used as a fortification. And while used as a fortification, it could keep about 200 people at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was actually called Maiden. One of the legends says it, why it is called Maiden, because it was never annexed and kept by the enemy.
Oh,
so if you go inside, you will see that there is no stairs between the first and the second. They just pull down the rope. And without the rope, you cannot get inside at all. Of course, now we have for tourists coming to Baku and Azerbaijan, we have artificial ones, so you can get easily up. But originally, it wouldn't be possible at all.
Well, of course, the Maiden Tower itself is of great historical interest, one of the landmarks of the city, but it's also wonderful from a wildlife point of view. All around us at the moment, we have hundreds and hundreds of swifts screaming around us. They've been nesting in the tower for centuries, like before anyone even was recording these birds were nesting here. And it's a really important site for them. Obviously, the swifts is the same species that we have in Ireland that visit us from Africa. They would spend the winter in Africa, and they come back to Europe, and they go all across the continent, so to Ireland, to Azerbaijan, and all points in between. And it's a real magnet for migratory birds like that because we're on the shores of the Caspian Sea, of course. It's a very busy route for birds on migration. They're looking for places to nest. And, well, the Maiden Tower, historically, has been one of the most important nesting sites in this whole region for these swifts. It's very strictly protected. Now, the tower, of course, is very old, and renovation works and restoration works have to take place from time to time. And, of course, that meant that, well, perhaps if restoration works had taken place, there wouldn't be so many nesting sites left for the swifts.
Now, you better explain exactly where they were nesting.
They nest in gaps between the brickwork. The tower itself, in the ancient bricks, there's lots of gaps, lots of little nooks and crannies. That's exactly what swifts are looking for. So when they're nesting in Ireland, in our cities, they would go usually into church spires, into gaps between bricks on the sides of old, maybe Georgian buildings. But here, the habitat here in Baku is even better for them, with these ancient buildings, lots of these gaps between the brickwork. But of course, those gaps are signs of damage to the building, mm-hmm. as mortar falls out over the years. And every so often, they would have to be repaired to prevent this wonderful tower collapsing. And so the worry was that perhaps these swifts would be displaced. But in consultation with some of our friends at the London Swift Conservation Organisation, they came up with quite an ingenious solution to rehouse these birds, and it's worked marvellously. So, as you can hear around us.
Yeah, and they're doing really well here. Samir, you might explain what that innovation was.
Actually, it was very important to do the restoration and conservation work at the Maiden Tower.
Exactly.
And while, of course, you start with the research, scientific research in architecture, historical architecture, and of course we found out that there is an ecological aspect of this. We understood that we cannot change the ecological balance once we do the restoration of the Maiden Tower. We first of all talked to our local ornithologist, then we also talked to a local NGO. Actually, it's a big campaign called IDEA, International Dialogue for Environmental Action, launched just last year, mm-hmm. by Mrs. Leila Aliyeva, and they actually initiated a new project. Together, we decided that we have to look at the international experience in this field in order to provide an alternative nests or alternative houses
for the
birds. And we started talking to the internationally recognized organizations. First, we contacted BirdLife of Austria because actually our contractor, restorer of the Maiden Tower, he's originally from Austria. He contacted them, and they said that there is a solution. And they provided us with an official letter saying that if you buy this kind of artificial nest boxes, specially designed for swifts,
yep.
not for other birds, but and they used it already in other smaller projects, mm-hmm. and it worked. So we decided that first we have to purchase these boxes and decide where we can place it in the vicinity of the Maiden Tower.
You want to keep it close to the original nesting site. Yeah,
exactly. And we found out that it's just a bricks. We have to understand how to put it on the wall. So we decided to attract local designers and painters to give an idea on how it can be incorporated in the overall design of the old city. Mm-hmm. and also to underline the importance of this issue. So we received a lot of suggestions and designs, and selected one that you can see now is three birds flying, male, female, and actually chick. We have more than 500 nests there. But afterwards, of course, we did the work and everything was ready by February. We know that they usually arrive in April. And of course, we had some time to understand, okay, we did the hardware. What's about the software? How
do you get the birds in?
Yes. And of course, we were happy to know that there is an international organization, London-based Swift Conservation, called Swift Conservation, who dedicated especially for this issue on the scientific basis. And we contacted them, and thanks to Mr. Edward Mayer, the head of this organization, we received the full information about how swifts can be attracted to the new nests. And of course, they said we have also, there is the techniques already, and they said that we had already a positive experience to attracting these birds to London Zoo.
Using this method?
Yes. They said, okay, be very patient, because it is not easy. These type of birds are very dedicated to their
nest sites,
and it might take you 2 or 3 years, but we are ready. Why? Because we also are not finalized the work on the maiden tower yet. We talked to our restorer. First, we decided that we will be able to keep some of the nests, maybe between 40 and 50, without the damaging
the tower itself, without damaging
the maiden tower. And we calculate that we had more than 500 holes inside. 250, 300 were occupied by the birds. And we decide that we need another 500 alternative nests. And now, at the moment, a big number of swifts, they are still living in the tower. But we started the project, and we received a very comprehensive manual and a CD disc with the birds' duets, as they call it.
Mm. Birds singing, basically, or calling, should I say.
Calling, really. But
it's amazing, actually. A duet is the perfect description of it, because it's only just been realised recently. That's a wonderful screaming noise we're hearing.
We're just hearing it now,
on cue. That's actually the sound of the male calling first, and then the female following. And that's only been realised in the last few years, that it's actually, what happens is a duet between the two birds. And in Europe, we don't have too many birds that duet. With most of our birds in Europe, it's just the male that sings. Some it's just the female, but mostly just male. But having a duet between the pair, it's almost unique.
Is it bonding?
It is. It's very much a bonding thing. And in fact, they're not even able to tell who's male and who's female until they hear the pitch of the song. So it's absolutely amazing. And that song is how they determine their nesting sites. So without hearing a lot of sound and a lot of noise of a colony of swifts, they won't want to move into a new nest site. So the only way that you can encourage swifts to take up new nest boxes is by playing this sound. And I know that a lot of work has been done on this. With other birds, it would be a bad idea to play any kind of sound near the breeding season. It would disrupt them. With swifts,
it would send them away, actually.
It would, yeah, absolutely. They would feel threatened. They would feel like the territory is taken. But swifts want to nest in colonies. Safety in numbers. And they're happiest nesting in an area where they hear lots of other swifts. So you kind of want to, if you want to get them to move into a new area for their own good, of course, because the original nest site is gone, what you have to do is fool them into thinking there's already a busy colony there. And of course, you should only do that when you know that you've provided perfect homes for them. And these boxes that are on the side of the building are absolutely ideal.
And they're in the design, as Samira said, of two adults and one young swift flying. Not quite the same, but if you ever watched Coronation Street all those years ago and Hilda Ogden had those little ducks flying across her wall, if you can picture that image in your head, only this is a lot more tasteful. So they have all these nest boxes in that design, very large, and it is strikingly beautiful.
And it's a legacy that's been going on since the tower was first built. I think it's been going on for centuries and centuries. It's amazing. And I think certainly the old town here in Baku, it wouldn't be the same without the sound of these swifts. It's the sound of the town, isn't it?
Absolutely. Exactly. I mean, I think it is a part of the culture already, at least for our generation. I mean, when I was just born, I saw them, and it is part of my memory about the old city, and not only about the old city, about the Baku. They come in April, and they leave in August. It is only season, but for this season, you wouldn't imagine old city without the swift.
Yes.
From Lisbon to Istanbul, Rome to Oslo, Moscow to Paris, the screaming sound of swifts wheeling high overhead is a summer constant, long welcomed by residents due to their phenomenal appetite for troublesome mosquitoes and flies, and is a sign that the seasons are progressing as they should. Swifts are important birds to millions of people. Perhaps the key to their survival begins with our education. to tackle the problems facing their country's urban nesting swifts, the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds in the UK have set up a special Swift Cities programme.
Good afternoon, RSPB headquarters. Sandy, how can I help you?
My name's Steph Moran. I work for the RSPB. My job title is Species Recovery Officer, but one of the things I do is I take on the role of Swift Species Lead. So the RSPB has identified a number of priority species, bird species where we think we can do some work for them, where there's a problem, they're declining, and each of those species has been allocated a species lead or species champion that can help sort of pull all of that work together and work with other people in the organisation.
And you're that leader and champion, presumably,
for Swifts. Yes.
So are they on the decline here in the UK?
They are, yes. So we've lost about 38% of Swifts in the UK since 1995. They are obviously migratory species, and they're only in the UK for about 3 or 4 months, but it's a particularly important time of their life cycle. They're obviously breeding here. Mm-hmm. So it may well be that they're facing problems at other areas on their migration, on the flyway or perhaps in their wintering grounds. But we do think that one of the problems is a lack of nesting sites and lack of availability of nesting sites in the UK. That gives us an opportunity to actually do something for them.
What do you do?
So one of the things that we can do is provide them with nest sites. So one of the most important things is to work with planners and developers and advocate that they take into account swifts in the local area when they're doing renovations and new builds, and particularly public buildings as well. So we work with local authorities, but schools and libraries and hospitals and things like that are often perfect nesting sites for swifts. They're really nice to have around, and local authorities in particular tend to be really keen to have them sort of in their buildings and in their local area. So one of the most important things we can do is ask people, as well as preserving the ones that are already there, is actually thinking ahead. If they are doing a new build, can you provide swift bricks which are actually incorporated into the building, as opposed to adding them on later? It's so cheap and easy to do, and it just provides the swifts with those nesting areas that they badly need.
Are you liaising with the architects in that case?
Yes, we have been. So we're setting up a Swift City initiative where we work in specific areas that are good swift hotspots. So particularly, we've been doing lots of work in Exeter and in Belfast as well, just two examples, and we're hoping to roll it out further to other UK cities. So we are hoping to set up networks of volunteers that can liaise with architects and planners and local authorities, actually to encourage them to do more for urban wildlife in their city.
Swift cities.
Explain
it in more detail to me, please.
So there are lots of things that individual people can do. So they can obviously put up swift boxes in their own houses and gardens. They can also look out for swifts, and if they see swift nesting or screaming swifts, which suggests that they're nesting nearby, they can input that into the RSPB swift inventory. It just helps us keep track of where the swifts are doing really, really well. But the next stage on from individuals doing great things for swifts is actually communities together doing great things for swifts. So they're colonial nesters, so you get swifts nesting all together. They like nesting together. One of the ways you can encourage swifts to come is by playing swift noises actually in the nest boxes. If they think they're already swifts there, they're more likely to come there. So that's one of the things that communities can do, is work with other people on their street, talk to local authorities and councils in their local area about public buildings, keep their eye on new developments, and actually work with those local authorities to improve swifts as a community.
But presumably they're a protected species and you can't interfere with the nesting. But this, I'm talking about construction now. If you want to build something or if you want to destroy something, you can't during the breeding season, or can you?
No, absolutely. So there's a legal requirement that you don't destroy an active swift nest. At the moment, there's no law to protect swift nests in the winter, though. So if the swifts aren't actually in it at the time, because they're in Africa for their in their wintering grounds, at the moment, there's no law to protect those nest sites, but swifts are incredibly loyal to their nest sites. Mm-hmm. So it does mean that they'll come back to where they nested the previous year, and their places will be gone. So what we're asking is that people go above and beyond what is just the law and actually say, okay, so we have a responsibility for the swift to actually make sure that if we are destroying their nest site, because we understand that renovations and things have to happen, then we provide an alternative for them so that when they come back, it's not just disappeared.
It's still there.
The new home.
And I've seen this in Azerbaijan and Baku.
Absolutely. So there's really good evidence that, you know, swifts actually use these boxes, and people seem to love them.
One of the UK's designated swift cities is Belfast. And the work being done to conserve these species in Northern Ireland has served as a particular inspiration for Birdwatch Ireland and other conservation groups on the other side of the border. Nest boxes have been installed at key sites around the city, with a view to establishing new colonies of these rather fickle birds. One of the most prominent of these swift nesting projects has been undertaken at the landmark Crescent Arts Centre, close to Belfast's Queen's University. Peter Cush is a senior scientific officer with the Biodiversity Unit in Northern Ireland's Environment Agency.
The building was built about 1874 by a woman called Margaret Byers, and her vision was to found an all-girls school. So this was the old Victoria College. And then sometime in the 70s, Victoria College moved out of their location up about halfway up the Malone Road. So the building then had various uses and was taken over eventually by the Crescent Arts Centre. But by this stage, it had got rather dilapidated. Basically, the scrub of stones crumbling inside. It was in quite a bad way. There was a temporary structure where you see this new build now.
Mm.
And it was really condemned. It was almost getting dangerous. So the trustees of the Crescent Arts Centre pulled together a whole partnership with government, local government, and applied to Heritage Lottery, and they got about 8.7 million grant.
Ooh.
And that's where we came in. As you know, I work for the Environment Agency, and I'm also interested in swifts. And as I come down here each day, I saw big flocks flying about, so I knew the building was good for swifts. So I approached the Crescent Arts Centre, explained to them about the swift colony, and that was a lever I had, because really Heritage Lottery's money is public money. It comes from people buying lottery tickets. So it means that the recipients are very anxious to fulfil their environmental aspirations right throughout the project. So I was really pushing at a fairly open door. So we got into discussions, and the main thing that we decided to do was to start the work in the first year immediately after the swifts had left. They've quite a short nesting season comparative with other species. So really, by the second week in August, they're usually gone, heading off to Africa. We think most of the Irish birds eventually reach Mozambique. But anyway, that's when the scaffolding went up on the far side, the south side. Mm-hmm. Most of the work on the south side was completed before the swifts arrived the following end of April, because they come in almost like clockwork. Mm-hmm. On the first week in May, second week in May. So the rest of the building then was very problematic. We just had to deal with issues as they arose, and the whole roof had to be lifted off the building, and parts of the wall were demolished. And it was amazing how the swifts tolerated us, you know. So we had permission from the Environment Agency to do the work, and it was licensed. But it was still a learning process, because we had to watch as we went along and learn. And the thing about a swift is, because it's so aerial, its whole life is lived up above. Mm-hmm. And as we are standing here, the swift takes absolutely no notice of us, because we're just these creatures that are walking about in the ground, and it lives up. Now, once we climb up and start peering into the nest sites, well, then that's a different kettle of fish. The swift suddenly becomes alarmed. Oh, what's this guy doing up in the air? He shouldn't really be here. But so they would fly around our heads and things like that, wouldn't mob us, and it was amazing the amount of work that could still carry on. And some of the workmen were quite hard men, you know, tough guys, you know, out in all weathers. And it was great to see how they gradually came, some of them grudgingly, to sort of admire these birds, which were hurtling round the rooftops. And really, up at the height they were, they could start to appreciate the speed, and you could hear the the wings cutting through the air. For the rest of the project, which lasted another 2 years, that was two full nesting season. It was quite an enjoyable project, and we had a whale of a time. And what you see now is the building restored, still got the vast majority of swift's nests embedded in the structure. And then on the new build here, we put in quite a few swift bricks. I think there's upwards of about 16 to 18,
if
you count them all.
They're embedded and right there in the structure itself.
Yeah, and they're a special thing called a swift brick. And the swift brick is built into the structure, so as when the swift goes into the swift brick, it doesn't penetrate the structure at all. And really, they can nest here for as long as those swift bricks exist.
So they've no access into the interior of the building at all?
No. So once they're in the swift brick, that's it. And the colony has since thrived. All the birds came back, and we reckon this is probably the biggest colony in Northern Ireland that we know of at the minute. between 30 and 40 pairs.
Wow.
And if you come here, and especially a day like today, which I think is going to be the warmest so far in the summer, if we come down here tonight between about 9 and 10 o'clock through to 10:30, you'll see the birds all coming back to their nests to roost for the night. There's also birds intermittently throughout the day coming in to feed the young. Probably feed each young about once every 2 hours. And what they're doing is they're trawling for insects, what we call aerial plankton feeders. So whenever a swift opens its beak, nearly half its head comes off. I mean, if my mouth was the equivalent, it would stretch to my ears. So you can imagine if I was speaking now and my head just opened right up. And they have a tremendous gape, so they just go through hoovering up little insects. It's amazing the numbers of spiders that are up in the atmosphere this time of year.
Yeah.
So a lot of spiders throw up a web and they're sucked up. And aphids, all sorts of beetles. And amazing the amount of insects. So they collect them over a period of a couple of hours in a big sticky black bolus in their mouth, and then they come back and regurgitate that to the chicks. It's usually two chicks, sometimes three, but two chicks are the norm. The birds come back from Africa, immediately go back to exactly the same nest they were in. Within 10 to 12 days, they've laid their eggs. There's a 19-day incubation of the egg, and then the chicks are in the nest roughly, on average, of about 40 days. And then as soon as the chick is ready, it leaves the nest of its own accord, totally independent of its parent. It's never flown before, so it's sitting in a wee, dark, very smelly space, because towards the end of the breeding season its own droppings are deposited in the nest.
Okay.
And there comes this day whenever, and if you watch young swifts sort of in the last week of July through to the first week of August, you'll see them peering out, and it's as if there's this instinct relentlessly driving them forward, and they come and they look out, and then they go back, and then they look out, and then they go back. And eventually, although they've never flown before, all they're able really to do in the box is a few press-ups and a few wing beats. They just throw themselves out. And I've actually had the privilege of seeing them when they leave the nest. And as they drop down for the very first time, you can imagine if they hit the ground, they're dead. And you can see them furiously flapping the wing two or three times. And it's almost as if they're going, God damn it. And then you can see the lift and up the go. They'll do a couple of circles and they leave right away. The parents come back to the nest, and we know this because we've got nest box schemes of quite a few around Belfast, so we can actually see the birds using cameras in the nest. The parents come back, where's Junior? So they're back looking for the young one, and they've usually regurgitated the bolus of food, and when they realise Junior isn't there, they just eventually eat the insects themselves. And we know from ringing records and now from the use of these little geolocators that within 3 days the swifts can be in Madrid, within 8 days they can be in West Africa, and we now know from ringing returns and geolocators that by Christmas they're in the Congo. And Birdwatch Ireland and BTO are doing a joint project, and we're going to put fit geolocators onto 3 pairs of Northern Ireland swifts and 3 pairs of swifts in the Republic. And then we're going to catch those swifts the following year because they're so nest faithful, take the geolocators off, and then put it in a computer program, and it tells us to about the nearest 25-40 kilometres where the swifts have been. And we already know that some swifts have been tracked in the European populations, and 8 days they can get from Liberia back up to Ireland if they want to come. So a really remarkable bird. That young bird that leaves the nest totally on its own, never sees its parents again, flies the whole way to Africa with its own inbuilt clock, sleeps on the wing, eats on the wing, preens on the wing, does everything, never lands, comes back to Europe the following year, and it kind of just messes about with other swifts trying to figure out what's going on as it becomes sexually mature. Usually in its second year back, it'll join a colony, and that's why you see the swifts, these screaming parties. It's a form of socialization that these birds do. And really, if you're a young swift and you want to know what's going on, you really just hang about with a flock of swifts and watch what they're doing. So they copy from the established breeders, and generally either in the second or third year back, they find themselves a nest site. So usually after 3 or 4 years, they'll first of all start to breed. They'll have their first breeding season, and then the whole process starts again. So they're an absolutely remarkable bird. There's not enough known about them. We don't really have the excuse now of ignorance. We know a lot more about them. The knowledge is growing all the time, and there's no reason I feel that we can't keep these birds and not only stabilise the population but reverse the fall in them and get them back up again.
It's the extraordinary flying habits of swifts that make them so difficult to study. Swifts often feed several kilometres from their breeding sites. Knowing exactly where they find food will help conservationists. Dr. Kendra Colquhoun is a senior conservation scientist with the RSPB in Beaver Park Forest on the outskirts of Belfast.
What we're doing is we're using the latest cutting-edge technology, which is GPS technology, obviously miniaturised GPS, has been around for years, of course, but miniaturisation of GPS is brand new for a species as small as a 40-gram swift. So obviously there's been a project on both sides of the island of Ireland in the last year putting on geolocators on swifts, and I have no part to play in that project other than I was removing geolocators for the lads last week because it's the same site as we're doing this new project. So that's going
to... Just to explain to our listeners that the geolocators are there for the purpose of finding out where these swifts go to when they leave Ireland.
That's right. Geolocators were developed by the British Antarctic Survey about 20 years ago to look where albatrosses went before really satellite, because they're not satellite tags at all. They're just recording light levels. Mm-hmm. Light levels vary around the world in a predictable way, dawn and dusk. So you infer position accurately to an accuracy of about 150 kilometres. For a migrant, of course, on the world map, 150 kilometres is nothing. To a foraging bird around Belfast, 150 kilometres is, you know, too vague. It's rubbish. And the reason that we're using, obviously, recording at a light level, it takes no battery power at all. So that's why it worked. And that's why even for a species like we did purple sandpiper geolocation, and various species, geolocators were getting smaller and smaller to 1 gram in size, to the same size as these tags.
And just to explain to people again, 1 gram, if you've ever had a paper clip in your hand, that's about a gram, isn't it?
It
or
is.
A stick of chewing gum is
well,
about a gram?
Well, I haven't measured it. What I did was, for my colleagues, 20 grains of rice did measure, or 18 or 20 grains of rice. So those... battery power is the problem. Battery weight is the problem. Yeah. And with the geolocators, that's why you could only get small things that were able to record light levels that had insufficient battery drain or sufficiently small battery drain to enable that to be that size.
Exactly. So you put one on the swift's back, these geolocators, off it goes to whence it came before it came here.
Exactly.
And then hopefully it comes back the following year, and then you are lucky enough to catch it in your mist nets.
Yes, just outside their nest, which is why, obviously, for a bird that's got that has fidelity to its nesting site, those are the species that you can do these sorts of studies on. So we actually, just last week, with the BTO, we recovered a couple of the geolocators and were able to see where they went for the winter.
So where did they go?
They go to Africa. Okay. No surprises. There you go. Headline.
Okay. Swift's winter, because they're a pretty mysterious bird, I'm told by everybody. You know very little about them.
Absolutely. So, as I was saying there, the GPS technology has moved on. And now I'm just showing you a little GPS tag. This is about £500 of the kit, developed by a company in England and jointly with the BTO. It is 0.8 of a gram of unit. Put on that material there is to make the harness. And there is the little unit. And that is what we are deploying on as little backpacks.
Goodness gracious.
It's got a little solar recharge unit there on it. And then these are the loops. To both communicate, to configure the harness to the duty cycles you wanted, to test the battery
again,
levels.
For the benefit of the one listener we have,
radio.
If you imagine, I suppose imagine a soldier, Fido, carrying a very large walkie-talkie with an aerial in his hand.
I suppose, as you say, that's like an action man.
Yeah.
One of the wee characters, like there. I must tell him.
Put it in my hand there, will you, please?
Yeah, surely.
I can barely feel the weight of it in my hand.
So we actually deployed three of those last week, one on Thursday and two on Friday, and... in a few days' time, because they were on deployments to collect data every 20 minutes, collect a GPS fix. So those units are coming on at 5:10 in the morning, programmed by us, switching off at 10, because of course they both swifts nest, or go to the nest overnight to sleep. That's wasting GPS power, because we know they're in the nest. We want to know where they are for the maximum amount of time when they're foraging. So from 5 a.m. roughly to 10 p.m. for 2 to 3 days, depending on weather, we will get a position every 20 minutes to work out where these birds are foraging, which is something that is new because you couldn't previously do
this
stuff.
Why do you need to know that?
Well, we need to know that because we want to know where they're foraging to try and then, as conservationists, try to understand where we might manipulate habitat, for example, to improve conditions for them, to increase invertebrate abundance, all these sorts of things.
But you couldn't make that decision based on 1 year's study, could you?
No, that's just why we're doing it over several.
Oh, yeah.
For Northern Ireland here, obviously the largest water body, freshwater water body in the whole of Britain and Ireland is Lough Neagh. Mm-hmm. Huge pulses of inverts coming out the coronamids. And that's undoubtedly a big driver for where we have a concentration of swift colonies around Lough Neagh. Now, the Belfast birds may well be flying to Lough Neagh for all we know to forage, which is a hell of a lot different to a bird nesting right beside Lough Neagh. So one of the things we're looking to investigate is to compare urban nesting swifts with birds in a more rural setting. And what we're in the business of is, particularly around Belfast here, with our community engagement work with swifts, which is involves communities, involves architects and builders and so on.
Yeah, Belfast is a swift city.
It is a swift city. Big engagement there on that front, working with architects and builders and so on, to educate people, to help with their nest site availability. Yeah. We predict that these birds in Belfast are foraging in urban green space, and that is something, a habitat that's in Dublin as well, in Limerick and mm-hmm. Cork and so on, and something if we can maybe improve those habitats to improve invertebrate abundance, then that might help swifts as well. A lot of mystery associated with these birds, and part of that is because they don't land, and part of it is because they're
That's another thing that blows my mind, that bird, I was told one time, if it hits the ground, it cannot take off.
We were observing a site today that we'll be at tomorrow, taking birds, and it's about a 50 millimetre hole in an old mill. And we don't know where that hole goes, but it just goes straight into a flat wall like that. And we were saying that bird, to get out, it's at least got six, I can see in the hole, at least got 6 inches of just pipe. It's just basically a ceramic pipe. It obviously shuffles on its legs to come out and sits at the edge and then just drops. And it's dropping from about 20 foot and that's it, off it goes. And of course, that they do come back to roost in that for the duration, to even maybe a week after the chicks are fledged, but then the rest of the year, they're in the air. Night and day.
Sleeping, mating, feeding.
Everything.
On the wing.
Unbelievable.
The following day, I caught up with Kendra and his team in a car park just off the main street in Portadown. When I arrived, they were constructing a makeshift swift cage trap.
Hey Derek, we're rigging up an improvised nest trap for a swift. We know the bird's going in and out of a hole in this wall, and unfortunately the only way to catch the bird at this situation is to put a cage that we have draped mist net over outside the entrance hole. And what we're planning to do with Philip Carson here and Roisin Kearney, my beautiful assistants, is to catch this bird when it exits. And what it'll do is it'll think it can get out, as it normally does, about 12 times a day. And this occasion there'll be a net in front of it and it will fly and drop into the bottom.
Now, are they easy to catch?
No, not very easy at all, as we're finding. But, you know, if we don't want to press the two birds too much there, but they'll be out within, hopefully within half an hour, this bird will come out and drop in here.
Patience is a virtue, but eventually the swift ended up in the net. After weighing it, measuring it, and putting a ring on its leg, it was time to fit the bird with its personalised GPS backpack.
This is the bit I least enjoy. It might sound odd because this is what it's all for, but this is where we're handling the bird, and it's a very intricate procedure. So I'm writing where we are, up the top of the stairs, nest, with no other identifier for it. What's the end of the metal ring in that bird? It's going to be number...
83.
Okay. Identifier is that metal ring, so that'll be with the bird for life. So anytime it's caught, wherever, by anybody, we will know. And the setting is Friday a.m., just writing some notes down at 5:10 start. Derek, that bird is now ready to go back to get on with its daily business and job, which is to help its mate provide for its unknown number of chicks in that nest.
So now, how do you get it into the air? Because I was told that when they hit the ground, they can't get back up.
Roisin will hold it in her hand and try and see if it'll do it for itself. The wind's blowing from that way, so it might get a little bit of lift, look. So just set it on the palm of your hand, Roisin. Don't throw it, just hold it in the palm of your hand there.
Yep.
The bird will obviously take a wee while to realise it can get away, etc.
Oh. The first attempt to release the bird was unsuccessful, but eventually it spread its wings and took to the sky.
Wait, that's all it needed. you know, the handling is obviously stressful, but there the bird flew off and over the rooftops. There it is, coming round, look.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you, team.
It's going to be fascinating to find out what we learn about Irish swifts over the next few years, as more and more data are gathered and we finally discover exactly where they go each year, how they get there, and even where they travel each day to feed. Niall Hatch.
Well, Derek, for me it's been an amazing journey. I mean, this is a bird that I've loved all of my life, one of my absolute favourites. Like when I was a kid, I used to marvel at them wheeling around overhead, and the sounds, the screams were for me the sound of summer, and I always want to know more about them. They're always for me the ultimate bird. You know, the birds, I guess I love birds because they fly, and that's the bird that seems to spend more time in the air than any others. And I was always had so many questions about them, I wanted to find out more, and it's only just in the last couple of years we finally start to answer these questions. We still have a long way to go, but we're getting there, and as this data is coming back, we're already getting very interesting information about where our swifts are travelling to, where they're feeding, and this is vital if we're going to conserve them. And I hope that we can find a way to get more people enthused about this bird, because it would be a tragedy if we were to lose it. I mean, my job in Birdwatch Ireland is to get people involved with birds, to communicate why they're worth saving, and the swift for me is like the ultimate symbol of the bird world. It's only a matter of months before these birds are returning to nest here. I'm hopeful that the collaboration with our BirdLife partners around Europe, and particularly the work that's been done here in Ireland, can help secure a future for this remarkable bird. Don't forget that we all have our part to play in this, and we have to do it if we want to keep hearing that wonderful summer sound of the swift.
That programme was first broadcast in 2015. Niall Hatch joins me now. Niall, hard to believe it's been 7 years since we made that programme. What's changed for the swift?
Well, certainly, yes. It's been very interesting to reminisce and to look back on the work that we did and that we saw at the time. We've certainly seen, unfortunately, swifts have continued to decline across much of Europe, including here in Ireland. At the time when we did the programme originally, we were working on the basis that although we knew swifts were declining, we thought that it was maybe not quite stabilising, but it wasn't too severe. At the time we made the programme, they were on the amber list in Ireland of the Birds of Conservation Concern. Just to explain what that is, it's a traffic light, basically coding that we have for different birds assessed across the whole island of Ireland, both north and south. And red is the highest threat level, amber is sort of medium, and green means that the bird isn't of particular concern. So at the time, the swifts were considered to be amber listed, so moderate to medium threat. But since then, there's actually just last year been the publication of a new version of this Birds of Conservation Concern list, and we've seen a decline of 56% in the swifts population. That's over just the course of 7 years within Ireland, and that puts them unfortunately onto the red list. So we're quite concerned about them. We've seen them actually just disappearing mysteriously, it seems, in many cases, just from certain many towns and cities across Ireland. Some places they remain relatively numerous and common, other places they've just completely vanished, and it's hard to work out exactly what the factors of play there are. Now, having said that, there's certainly lots of cause for optimism. We're seeing more and more people getting involved with swift conservation. We're seeing lots more local groups like Teddy Towns groups, local residents associations, also schools, commercial businesses, putting up those swift boxes on their buildings, putting those calling systems that we discussed in the program as well to encourage the birds to come into nest. So we know that this works. This is how you turn the tide. One of the biggest problems that this bird has faced is a lack of nest sites. Now, that hasn't improved in terms of the building infrastructure in recent years. If anything, that's got worse, but that can be counteracted by putting proper provision of these nest box sites, exactly as we saw, for example, at the Bees building in UCC. That's an example of where that works really, really well. So that's something we hope to do more and more of. Birdwatch Ireland itself has become very involved in advising local Tidy Towns groups and other community groups. We produced a booklet actually called Saving Swifts, which people can download from the website to see what they can do themselves. And there's many swift conservation groups have sprung up across the country. So that's really very encouraging. However, it fits into a wider pattern that we're seeing in terms of declines of our trans-Saharan migrants, the birds that migrate to Ireland each year from the other side of the Sahara Desert in Africa. What these have in common is that they're insect eaters and they fly long distances. So they're very susceptible to things like climate change, which causes irregularities in the weather and more unsettled conditions, which means it's harder for those birds to migrate safely. And also a great scarcity of food. You just don't see as many insects around as you used to. And of course, that is swift food. We're also seeing lots of initiatives, though, Derek, as well, in terms of people recording swift. A lot of citizen science work going into this. So a project that I've been involved with for many years through BirdLife International, it's called Spring Alive. And it's a wonderful project aimed mainly at children and teachers in schools, but people from all walks of life can take part in this. We ask people to monitor certain migratory birds. So we have swifts in there, also cuckoos, swallows, sand martins as well. And lots of people are sending those records into us. We got over 14,000 records in 1 year on Spring Alive, just from Ireland alone. And this is happening across 40 countries in Europe, Africa and Central Asia. So we are getting people mobilised to learn about swifts and see where they're coming from and where they're going to. But it's also important that we track their nest sites here in Ireland and make sure that they are considered when new buildings are going up, when people are making renovations to existing buildings, because you can find them without even realizing that they're there. You know, you could just stumble across them. I believe, Derek, you saw some recently in a building in Waterford. Is that right?
Indeed, I did, Niall. The Cistercian Monastery, just outside of Lismore in County Waterford, where the nuns are, they had an extension built some years ago, and they had swift bricks put in place during the construction. And it's great to see the swifts have actually taken up residence in those swift bricks. Now, looking at the building, it just looks like any normal building. It's rendered from the outside. But if you look closely just under the eaves, you can see 1, 2, 3 holes, and then move over a little bit further, 1, 2, 3 holes, and then again 1, 2, 3 holes. And the swifts are in there. And curiously enough, across from that building, there's an old barn with swallows. And at the front where the church is, under the eaves, they've got house martins. So they've got the full complement.
Absolutely, Derek. Yes, they are very resourceful when it comes to finding nests. They're so desperate for nest sites, of course, that they will quickly take these up. And I think that idea of having those swift bricks built into new buildings or when renovations are happening as well, it's such an easy thing to do. It causes no hardship to anybody. These bricks are now widely available. You can also retrofit existing buildings with wooden or concrete nest boxes on the outside. But even better, if you can get the special made swift bricks that build into the wall of a building, there's no problem. This is a bird that has no downside to it whatsoever. It doesn't make any mess. It doesn't leave droppings around inside the walls. It hoovers up the insects in the air around us, so it gets rid of all those mosquitoes and horseflies and things like that that cause us such problems. So there's absolutely no reason not to have this bird around. And of course, as well, the sound that they make, that screaming, it's just so evocative. And listening back to the documentary, just hearing that sound, it just transports me back to all the places we saw those birds. And one of the things that I think was most striking to me about the documentary when we were making it, Derek, is that every person we spoke to was so passionate about that bird. From the streets of Baku with the Maiden Tower there in Azerbaijan up to the Linen Hall in Belfast. It was absolutely amazing just how important these birds were to these people. It certainly, they incite a lot of passion and dedication in people, for sure.
For sure. Okay, Niall, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Derek.
There goes Niall Hatch from his home in Greystones in County Wicklow. If you want to listen back to this programme, you can do so by visiting our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Until next week, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Mooney Goes Wild was presented and produced by Derek Mooney.